This is the Who Wars Network. You have made the right choice.
Hello, this is Andrew Chalmers, the writer and doctor in Doctor Who Dark Journey.
And this is M.A. Tamboro, the director of Doctor Who Dark Journey, where I also play Fred.
And you're listening to an exclusive episode of Doctor Who Dark Journey on the Who Wars podcast.
Throw the power in the balloon! It's faltering! We're going in the wrong direction! Holmes, we have no time! We are out of time!
An obvious deduction, Doctor!
We're going down! Holmes, hold on! We're losing air!
Obviously, Doctor!
Hold on, Holmes! We're going down!
You state the obvious again!
We're going down!
An icon of London, totally destroyed by myself and an alien in a balloon chased by ghosts.
We only destroyed the clock part thingy.
One does try to protect London icons, Doctor.
That's what I'm trying to do. Stick with me. Less than 18 minutes. Come on, hurry!
A secret doorway. That's not so secret.
Elementary, I think.
Down the spooky staircase we go. They'll be hiding. Waiting. In the chambers below.
Doctor, what was the time of the banishment?
My people, the Gallifreyans, were dying. I'd done the impossible. I had pioneered regeneration, given them immortality.
Absolutely fascinating.
I wanted to give life, yes, but I wanted it to be pure. I began experiments to separate their capacity for evil, that black instinct that lived within my race.
How?
I'd seen it.
Doctor, I'm afraid your experiments have failed.
This is the doctor.
What have you done? Doctor!
Help them. They need you.
My experiments, they failed. The Gallifreyan people suffered. They died. I'd emptied them until they were vessels, not people. Empty. Dead. Thousands. I can still see them. Their lifeless eyes.
But you were only trying to rid them of evil.
Instead, the evil seemed to grow in them. The Time Lords were born. An immortal force for corruption, genocide, slaughter. And I created them. I was the doctor, but I couldn't cure the Gallifreyan people, my people. I had failed them.
Doctor!
Holmes, around us! On the cave walls! Faces! Faces are forming! Demons.
Doctor, do something!
Master Gull, the Time Lord is here!
It ends as it begins! It ends as it begins! It ends!
Mistress Cassandra, let the Doctor hear our voice.
It ends as it begins. It ends as it begins. It ends.
The spirits, they've gone.
Say, I wrote a book about ghosts once. The Doctor discovers poltergeists. It flew off the shelves. You get it? Flu? Shelves? No?
Such evil, Doctor. Have you ever considered...
Yes?
Leaving?
Would you?
Abandon the needy, the oppressed, the victims? Never.
That's the beacon that brought me to you. Believe in it.
I will try.
Then you've succeeded.
We will try together.
Together.
One last time.
Holmes! He's vanished.
Be that beacon, Holmes. You'll need to be.
Summon the lights! Summon the lights! Summon the lights!
No! Anthony! No! My baby!
Oh, Mother, your child is our sacrifice!
We are
Pope, what in God's name? He's gone. Where am I? The catacombs leading to an underground chamber.
Shadowy chambers, dark corridors. This never ends well. Can't they just put the lights on? Nah, it's not demonic enough, is it? I'm transforming humanity into the demonic Illuminatus. Look, I'm using neon bulbs. You're out of party tricks. It's boring.
Secrets, Doctor. We know your secrets. Flee now.
You know nothing.
We know everything, and we are many.
Keep away from me.
Secrets.
Get back.
We know your secrets.
Get back. Secrets. Get back.
Secrets. Secrets.
No.
We know your
no.
Secrets.
Get back.
Secrets.
Get back.
We know your secrets.
Keep away from me.
We know your secrets.
No.
Emily? Emily, where are you?
Mr. Holmes? I'm here!
Emily, I will find you. Remain calm. The sacrificial chamber. Emily's child is here. Cassandra, girl!
The darkness. The darkness.
The passion.
You are summoned with the blood of the innocent.
Farewell to the flesh. Farewell to the flesh. Farewell to the flesh.
Emily, are you here?
The time is here. The time is here.
I have to do something.
Run, Matt. Run.
You will not control me.
The fall of this blade brings illumination by blood.
Doctor! No, the stars are aligned!
Feel the Illuminatos! Feel the cuts of illumination!
Good God, no! Do you murder the child? An illusion. It's exactly as it was before. There's still time. Cassandra, the bonesmen, they can't move.
And as fast as you can. Paddy cake, Gallifrey's man. Chase me as Cyberman as fast as you can.
The doctor's with the child.
Doctor!
Holmes, it's fine. My orange crystal is all purpose. It's also an alternative reality adjuster. It's rubbish! There is a belief that every conceivable outcome actually occurs. Every alternative reality may be real. I chose the outcome these lunatics wanted to see. But it's an illusion.
Elementary, I think.
And then boom, I froze them, like the spirits back there. In time. Cool, eh? See what I did there? With the froze and the cool.
Doctor, is it wise to jest?
Who cares? Look around. Can we be in any more danger?
Agreed.
And our aura still sounds rubbish. Buys us valuable time. We grab Junior, get Emily, and... Damn! I set it to PM. Some time, Lord, eh? That's why I always sleep in. Come on, Baldy. You're coming with me. Ha ha ha! A sonic baby sling. I've never done that before. In you go.
Will the child be safe?
Safe as houses. On my back, he stays. Check this out.
Burning a circle around you. An occult defense, of course.
Nah, Cassandra and her pals are waking up. It's the first thing they're going to see. It'll get them all annoyed.
Doctor, where is Emily? I heard her voice earlier.
I don't know. Go now. Find her.
Holmes?
Yes, Doctor?
This place is alive. Possessed. They know everything. The things deep inside you. Things you don't know about yourself.
I understand.
You don't. Go now. My pals are waking up.
Come to me, Doctor.
Don't look at her, Anthony. She's upset because we came on late. That's my boy. That's my boy. I have a bomb.
Who goes there? Show yourself.
Son, come with me.
Son, mother.
Father?
Come this way.
Son,
your
mother.
I'm here.
Follow
me. Son,
follow me.
Son,
please come this way.
Wait, come back.
I have a bomb. Big bomb. 5, 4, 3, 2...
It is not a weapon, Doctor.
You're right. It's a nasal hair trimmer. Never mind. I'm not a bomb kind of bloke.
Oh, you're not going to go around starting all that Doctor stuff, are you? I don't go around yelling loony stabby bird and big huge scary demon bloke to him. The big huge scary demon bloke. Your boyfriend's putting a bit of weight, eh? I see he's fully transformed, looking sharp for a metamorphosized demonic guardian of this filthy ceremony.
Do you know who we are, Doctor?
Annoying people? Like telemarketers. But demonic.
Same thing, I suppose.
I am the whore of the apocalypse.
Not the kind of girl you can take home to Mum, Baldy? Party chick. Back off! Let Emily go, or I'll bring your filthy house down!
You would not dare!
So we're at that stage where you spout your appalling plans and inflate your disgusting ego. How interesting.
Nah, that's more your style, is it not?
You want a speech? I'm saying nothing. Let them go, or you're all dead.
Father? Where are you? It can't be. Mother?
Sherlock, my son. Do you love me, Doctor? Would you admit it if you did? A love that you would be ashamed of, but a love nonetheless.
Ever.
The curse of the flesh to be a normal man.
The noble warrior, who lost his will to fight.
Perhaps.
But we did something, Doctor. The Dalek fleet that slaughtered our family, murdered Susan.
Not your family, mine. Were my family.
Are your family, Doctor. The Daleks hunted you, murdered. We hunted the Daleks. We did this for you.
No one can oppose the Daleks! Exterminate!
Hey there everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Who Wars, the audio fanzine, for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. I'm your host, Rob Irwin, and as you've just heard, we've played a new episode of Doctor Who Dark Journey. That was the debut of that episode, called The Age of Banishment. And what I have for you now is an interview with Andrew Chalmers, who plays the Doctor. in the Doctor Who Dark Journey series. This is an interview I conducted last weekend. Andrew and I sat down and spoke about Doctor Who, of course, and about the Dark Journey audios, of course, but we also spoke a bit about Star Wars as well, which was very interesting, and that talk about Star Wars led to even some small discussion of where a new AM audio media project might be going in the future, which was very interesting. And I've got to say, before I hit play on the interview here, this was such a fun conversation for me to have, both what you'll hear, and then after I stopped recording, Andrew and I started talking about other things, and it turned out that one of the pieces of Doctor Who merchandise I coveted back in 1986, he owned, and he's just moved house, and the box it was in was sitting behind him, and he couldn't think of the place he bought it from, but I could remember the name of the mail order service. And we went off on this massive tangent, which may have actually been interesting for some Doctor Who fans of our vintage, i.e. our age, to hear. But I just didn't have the recorder on at the time, so it's a very special sort of conversation that'll sit with me for a while. And really, for both Andrew and myself, reinforced the nature of Doctor Who fandom, and fandom in a wider sense of other shows and such. And the way it brings us all together, and the way we go about our day and doing similar things, you know, we're not all that different from each other when you start to scratch beneath the surface, particularly when you're of a certain vintage and grew up with certain, you know, shows or movies and things like that. So I'm starting to ramble, so without any further ado, let me hit play on the interview, and I'll be back at the end to round things out.
As I'm presently speaking to you, I have a pink Mohican. Listen, you kiddies at home, do not jump on a Zygon. They hate it. Even during mating season, do not do it. Yeah, I think we've got Jessica Rabbit in season 3, but Mike's concerned about the carrots. It's like doing an interview with Pac-Man.
Hello, Andrew, and welcome to Who Wars.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for having me. This is wonderful. I'm very excited, actually.
It's a great pleasure. And, well, what an episode we've just had there, The Age of Banishment. That went to some pretty dark places, didn't it?
Yes. I mean, the whole thing, it is called Doctor Who Dark Journey, but we've tried to push his character, which was hinted at in the first season with the site and all the rest of it, but we've tried to push it into some of that territory without losing who the Doctor is at his core. So it's quite exciting, actually, to be able to write that stuff, and it seems to be liked by people. So we haven't had any issues with people saying we've gone overboard.
I mean, the whole talking about experiments that had been done in the past and these whispering voices in his head, one of them might have been myself.
Yes. Yeah, you sound a lot calmer this evening.
Well, thank you very much, and less echo.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, fingers crossed, right?
Anyway, before we go on with all of the audio side of things, the first question I have to ask, even I have to contractually ask this on my own show.
Wow, okay.
Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Well, it has to be Doctor Who, but in saying that, there is a big place in my heart for Star Wars. I remember being freaked out with excitement in Edinburgh, where I'm a Scot, and I remember going to Princes Street to actually see Star Wars. And as we went around the corner, there was a massive lineup. Maybe it wasn't that many people, maybe just a few years in between, more than a few adds to that exaggeration. But I remember we got around the corner and my dad looked at the lineup and he had this look on his face and he looked down at me as if to say, I don't want to stand in this lineup to watch a bloody space movie. And he looked down at me and I'm like, are we going, Dad? Are we going? And he's like, maybe I'll just get you a wee action figure toy or something. And the look on my face, I was crestfallen. And then about an hour or so later, we were in the movie. I got the action figures, and we didn't have a Vader figure in Scotland. They hadn't arrived.
Mm-hmm. And my auntie Moira, who lives over in Toronto, actually sent one over for me. So I was probably one of the first kids to have an action figure for, you know, Vader there. So, yeah, I've always loved Star Wars. I'm really freaked out about The Force Awakens. Brilliant, yeah. Who can't be? It's a work of art.
What's freaking you out the most about Force Awakens?
Just, I think, the excitement of it. I think Abrams, you know, has his knockers and everything. But I think he knows what's needed to bring life into something. Because as with most people, once again, you know, anything creative is wonderful. But I did have issues with the prequels. I thought they did weird stuff, you know, calling Anakin Annie. Mm-hmm. Maybe Lucas, as a director, should maybe not direct. I thought Hayden Christensen, who's from Toronto, actually, I thought, you know, I've seen him in other stuff. I just don't think he hit the mark as Anakin. And like I said, I don't believe that, you know, he's really going to be responsible for inventing C-3PO and, you know, Boba Fett's. It all got a bit, you know, sort of incestuous there for a while, which yeah. I didn't really get into. But Obi-Wan Kenobi having the fight in the rain is something which is great. Yoda's fight scenes at the end, fantastic. So, you know, once again, let's not get carried away. It had some really great stuff in it.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff in the prequels, I find the best stuff is very visual. And in fact, I was thinking about this the other day, from Attack of the Clones, arguably the worst of the three for many people.
Yeah.
The scenes of Anakin just fanging along on his speeder bike across Tatooine, they're beautiful to look at. Or when he's carrying his dead mother back towards the rest of the people at the homestead, and he has this look on his face like, oh man, he's really annoyed.
Yes. Annoying.
They look great. Yeah. I'm trying not to swear.
I'm a little bit vexed. Oh, my family's being wiped out. I'm a little bit vexed. Yes. Mm. I know.
And when you see them in perhaps a video clip, maybe with just music in the background, they look spectacular, yet it's part of a movie that so many people just aren't into.
I know. It had its moments. I remember one of the saddest things is I remember seeing them all at the movies. The only one I didn't see at the movies was the last one in the prequels, which is, sorry, forgive me, I'll probably get hung out to dry. What's the name of the last prequel again?
That's Revenge of the Sith.
Revenge of the Sith, right, Revenge of the Sith. Once again, brilliant fight scene. I was watching it again on YouTube. I just had a hankering to actually watch it. But when we watch the second one, which is Attack of the Clones?
Yes.
Attack of the Clones. Do please accept. Please forgive me. But when we were watching that, we're in the theater, and when the Lucasfilm logo came up, there wasn't the excited round of applause that I'd always seen for every other Star Wars movie that I'd seen.
Mm.
And because by that time, people were annoyed with Phantom Menace, and people started all that sort of... I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, it's like a hatred, which is ridiculous. Mm. But all that had started... You know, people were starting to complain about all the special editions that, you know, came out before, who shot first, and all these other landmark questions, you know. And I just thought that was a bit of a sign, really, that people... It was a little bit... I don't want to sound too cheesy, but a little bit of magic, I think, had been destroyed.
Yeah.
I think. I think that. So, hey, The Force Awakens, you know, the trailer was awesome. I watched it with my wife, and I said, you got to see this. You know, on the screen it goes. Linda's at the side of me, and she's looking. And before you know what's going on, I looked up, and Linda kind of had a tear in her eye at the end when Han Solo obviously was there with, you know, Chewie. I love the way they did that, because you hear his voice before you actually see the pair of them.
Which is
great. And obviously, you know, Mike and I employ that trick on audio all the time. Yeah, it's tricks of the trade, you know. Yeah, it's fun. I'm really I've got high hopes for it. I can't. That's why I'm excited by it.
Excellent. Well, we'll talk some Doctor Who in a moment and some more Star Wars if you like, but just coming back to the main reason you're here, the audio adventures you're making with AM Media, and I guess the first question on my mind is, how did that come about? How did you meet the AM Audio Media guys?
Well, I'm kind of half of them, really. I'm the A in AM. Mike is the M. And if we get a Harry, we'll be Ham Audio Media, which anyone listening to our stuff might say that we've already succeeded in that goal, you know. Mm-hmm.
So how did you meet Mike?
Mike and I have, well, we met when I helped Mike get a job in a well-known Canadian retailer. Mike came in, and this is like the Halcyon. This feels like almost like a documentary. You and I should be walking around looking at the store in question, you know?
We should be, yes. In fact, I'll recreate it somehow, you know.
I'll spare you the misery. We had to suffer it, my friend. We will not take you there. I was a manager, and Mike came in and he had all these portfolios and he said, are you hiring? And I was like, well, yes and no, what have you got? And I was rather struck by sort of him as a person. He was very nice and mannerable, and he had all this wonderful stuff that he'd written. And back then, I sort of had aspirations, you know, to write. I'd sort of done little things. It was the only thing I could really see myself doing. He came on board, and then a few weeks later, it became apparent we were both Who fans. So we had the Doctor Who thing, and then Mike and I decided that we would write a comedy drama concerning the aspirations of people working in retail, or what we called the Graveyard of Ambition. And we set about really assembling this and recruiting it and everything else. And then after that, we did other various things, and we pitched them to networks, and we hit that reality show wall. And then it all went quiet, and we did little things, and then Who came sort of back in a big way. And then Mike said to me, why don't we do an audio play? And I said, fine, we'll do everything. We can do any of my scripts. By this time, I'd produced a long list of failures that I was using as a coffee table. And Mike said to me, let's do Doctor Who. And I said, no. And he said, let's do Doctor Who, and you can be the Doctor. And I said, yes, let's start Monday. So that's the classic recreation of what happened. So that's it in a nutshell, yeah.
Because I was going to ask, you know, were you more of a writer who was going to act, or an actor who was wanting to write? So it seems you were on the writing side of things primarily.
Oh, yeah. I did not have any aspirations to be in front of the camera. I was affectionately known on the set of the retail comedy we did as 28 Take Charmers. Because I was so, I was, and that was being generous. I was sometimes up overnight rewriting scenes or writing new scenes, and I couldn't even remember what the hell I was doing. I couldn't even remember my own lines. The audio stuff is nice because I can just read it and hopefully sound halfway convincing. But I'm all for audio. I'm all for audio. I move around a lot. Mike's always telling me to calm down and all this kind of stuff because I do move around a lot and my voice drifts in and out. But I can't remember anything these days to save my bloody life, Rob. So audio's the way to go. Audio, and I was told I have the ideal face for audio as well, which I take as a... But in hindsight, I'm not sure it was meant that way.
Now, what inspired you to do audio? Obviously, there are the big boys like Big Finish doing Doctor Who audio, but maybe you'd listened to classic audios on the radio in the past, or was there some other reason that inspired you to do an audio rather than a video production?
Mike, once again, it's Mike, and I suppose with a name like Mike, he's got to be an audio guy, you know what I mean? Mike has got an affection and a love, you know, the CBC over here, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, they have an old sort of audio museum. And then one day Mike and I were down there and he sort of said, have you seen the museum? And we went through this museum and it was all about the microphone used on this famous CBC show and all the rest of it. So Mike has that kind of love and affection, you know, for it, which has now sort of echoed on to me, I think, because I'm quite a fan of it as well. Ricky Wright, who plays, well, he plays numerous people in Dark Journey, but you would probably recognize him as Mr. Gull, or just Gull, who's obviously this transforming evil entity with a great link to the Doctor's past. He's part of like a comedy troupe, and we went to see him a few weeks ago, and he was on stage. But it was like a radio broadcast, but it was live, if you know what I mean. So Mike's got the affection for it. Mike's got the affection, and Ricky's got it as well. And I love it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. We'd love to do something live like that in the future, and we've got plans for our next project, which is actually Who and Star Wars related. So we've got plans to maybe do the last episode of that in a live setting, which we thought could be very, very interesting. And I'm kind of sweating now even telling you about this because the prospect of it would make me a nervous wreck. But we're going to hold it in a pub, so that might cure the answer.
Well, it's a very Who Wars sounding show.
Absolutely. It would be ideal for you guys. Yes, it would be ideal for you guys.
And I was just going to say, just thinking of doing shows live like that. I mean, coming from the UK, you'd remember the Goodies, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, the Goodies.
Before they were the Goodies in the 60s, and I think Graham Gardner and Tim Brooke Taylor still might do it. They do a live radio show where they'll do sound effects and things like that.
Yes. I'm
desperately trying to think of the name of the show, but I can't think of it off the top of my head.
You know, neither can I, but I know that Oddie, you know, Bill Oddie?
Yes.
He's very much, he's like the David Suzuki of the UK now. He's very environmental, but he's very impassioned, and he doesn't take any nonsense. I saw an interview with him the other day when he was basically lambasting the reporter for not knowing certain things, and he was on a boat, and the reporter said, it was live, and the reporter said to the person who was with Oddie, if you go home on the boat and he falls overboard, just leave him in the water. And he's like, yeah, whatever, that's really funny and all that. So Oddie is not to be messed about with as one of the Goodies. He's quite formidable, yeah.
Yeah, he's not like he's a chubby 70s friendly kind of persona anymore, no, I think.
Not doing that high speed stuff on the bike, which I remembered from my childhood there, yeah.
All right, you've done a couple of series now. So you can probably, you know, in terms of production, how long does it take to make an episode? Or if it's easier, how long does it take to make a whole series, you know, from the moment you're brainstorming ideas through till the day an episode drops?
Right. Oh, my God. There's a loaded question. The first was actually 5 episodes, I recall. It started off as being 4 episodes, but when you record things, you're not really aware of... I write them episodically, but by the time they're acted out, they can be longer, depending if it's intensive with dialogue or action. So 5 episodes, I think it was turned around. We recorded it in 2 days in the studio, 20 hours, I seem to recall. Roy Miranda, who plays and won an Audioverse Award for playing Sherlock Holmes, we were in the studio for 20 hours, which was pretty exhausting. Everyone else had, you know, like had like a block of interview, sorry, of recording time to come in and to do stuff. But the first one, when it went to the sound engineering stage done by the wonderful Clayton Turner, I think it was turned around in about 5 months.
Right.
From him, I know, from him working on it, because it's so, so technical, you wouldn't believe it. Season 2 was recorded once again over 2 days, which wasn't bad because we do have a lot more, you know, content. And Mike and I have been working on that since November of last year. So it takes a tremendous amount of time. I mean, early leading up to this interview, I was working on things Mike and I were working on basically episodes 5 and 6. And yeah, it takes a long time, you know, because one sound out of place, you really hear it. If it's right, you don't hear it. You just assume it's okay. One sound out of place is everything is gone. And we now are in that position. We were actually had season 1 as well, but we're in that position now where we've become really fastidious with the detail to a point where it's just kind of, you know, it can drive you a little bit mad after a while, you know.
Well, I was going to ask, in terms of production, has there been any difference between the first and second series? It sounds like one of the changes might be that you are getting a bit more fastidious about, you know, getting things just so, perhaps.
Yeah, I would say so. I think the scope of it, I wrote the original script as an episode. It was going to be David Tennant. I wrote it as a spec script for the Canadian Film School. And I just thought, at that time, and this goes to show you, you know, how long ago it was. It must have been 2009 or something. At that time, there was no Matt Smith. It was all David Tennant. I think he'd announced he was leaving, and I wrote it, and it was basically only that. And I had ideas for what would happen afterwards, but then I had other ideas. I thought, right, let's have a new doctor. Let's have a doctor who's on his last regeneration, because that's always more dramatic. Let's make him a little bit on the darker side and make him quite unique. When we started recording it, which was years after I wrote it, before all the Holmes hysteria, I was a fan of the Arthur Conan Doyle books as a kid. Mm-hmm. And that was basically it. There wasn't any Robert Downey Jr. There wasn't Benedict Cumberbatch, which I'm amazed I can pronounce, because I can't even say normal words. So when that all came out, it was a big thing. I based mine on the classic Holmes that I knew and loved, and my mum introduced me, you know, to Basil Rathbone, who played him with aplomb, you know, back in the days. Mm-hmm. The second season, when I got my hands on that, it was the 50th anniversary year, and I think I was inspired to make it epic. I wanted to have a bit of a, why is the Doctor experiencing these things? Where do these Illuminatus things come from? What's the connection? And to weave it in was fun, because I could do little William Hartnell sort of cameos and have the Daleks in there in a way that I didn't think was being self-indulgent. So more epic, more music. We had one sound engineer for season 1. I think we've got about 5 or maybe even up to 6 or 7 for this particular one. Mm-hmm. Joshua Hemming has done the music as well as sound design for episodes 1, 2, and 6. So it sounds more epic and more involved. But with it comes more work, and with more work comes more insanity. But it's all in a good thing. It's all in a good. It's all in a good. You know, spirit. Exactly. Or so I'm told.
Oh no, it's fantastic stuff. And a kind of a writerish question here. Then sure. People say in audio you can do, you know, in quotation marks, anything. You can roll on 1,000 spaceships if you want. But yep. Practically, are there things that are hard to achieve or convey in an audio? Have you ever wanted to do something and thought, oh, wait, that isn't quite working, you know, for the listener?
You know what? I'm laughing because if Mike was here, I would just say, Mike, and pass it over to him. And then he would tell you about all the things that we spoke about on the morning after he read season 2. And the answer to he's like, he calls me Charmy and I call him T-Bone, which is, you know, like he's not a T-Bone, but he is a T-Bone. Right. So I said, listen, T-Bone, here's the script. He's like, Charmy, he says, I love the script and you write like it's poetry. He says, but he says, we can't do all these flashbacks. He said, there's a flashback every page. And I said, that's the story. I said, William Hart, you know, the first Doctor on Gallifrey and the spirits, and mm-hmm. he tried to exorcise the demons of the Gallifreyan people, and that's what it's all about. So I would say flashbacks are very, very, very difficult to do, because you can't exactly do like, and Robin Andrew last week, and you and I are walking along a street and we have an argument with a guy dressed as a bear or something, and then and now we're back to this stage. You can't do that. So that flashbacks, and you can do them, and we do them, but intense action sequences where everything is, like, if it was filmed, it would be incredibly visual, obviously, as I said, stating the obvious. But when you've got it on audio, how do you have two people running across a train, you know, pursued by a monster, or hanging onto the side of the TARDIS as it's doing some wonderful stunt? That's the problem for me as the writer, because you're almost going into being a little bit exposition crazy. You know, Rob, watch out. There's a monster chasing us up the side of the building, 100 stories high. Andrew, my God, we're so high, and the monster's chasing us. That's a challenge. In saying that, when I have to write stuff like that, it can come across as a really good line, because, I mean, we had a problem with the Doctor hanging off of the TARDIS, and Mike said to me, what do we do? How do we tell people he's hanging off the TARDIS? So there's a confrontation, and the Doctor goes, ah! And Holmes says, has she injured you, Doctor? And I said, no, you're standing on my bloody fingers. I'm on the TARDIS ledge. So you create something quite funny, or so I'm told, because you're trying to say to the audience, the Doctor's hanging off the TARDIS ledge.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So it all kind of comes out in the wash, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Now, another writer-ish kind of question, I guess. Is there a Doctor you try and think of when you're writing your Doctor? I mean, I might be a bit off track here, but I get shades of McCoy when I listen to the audios.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do.
Anything Scottish is good for me.
McCoy. I guess there's the darkness in McCoy sometimes.
Right, not kind of like slipping for no reason and falling on his backside in Time of the Rani McCoy. We're talking more of the playing, you know, around with Fenric and stuff like that.
Yeah, not Spoons McCoy or Ferret Down the Trousers McCoy. No. Good McCoy.
The Grunder Hunter.
That's right.
Yeah, totally. Get on the Grunder Hunter. I've had quite a few, actually. Someone said McGann. When Mike and I were recording it, I would say a line, and before I said the line, I would go, because I love doing the Tom Baker affectation. So Mike would go, great, 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 do more of those. So I try and have a creation of the Tom Baker, but not really. No, not really. When we recorded the first one and I wrote it, I didn't write it with me in mind. Like, I didn't. It was written around, it was modeled around me. In the script, he's described as, which I thought would be funny. But when I never thought I'd have to perform those lines. But when I wrote all of the second season, I knew I'd be saying those lines, so I felt a bit more at home with them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anything that anyone says regarding, you remind me of this or you remind me of that is fantastic. So thank you for that. Linda, my wife, described me. She said, you're like a link between the classic and the new Doctors. You're like almost like a link Doctor or something like that. So that was an interesting thing, you know, to hear as well. Anything is fine. Anything is fine.
No, I can get on board with that. I see what she means. Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, it's all a bit of a little bit of a dream world, actually, to be even, you know, talking with anyone about your version of the Doctor. I mean, it's every fan's dream. So, you know, I mean, I love it, obviously, but it's still a little bit of a dream world. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do. I do. Yeah. I got to play the Doctor once when I was about 12.
Okay.
In a little fan video that our little club made locally.
Really?
Yeah, that's the one and only time I've played the Doctor.
Really? Yeah. Well, it's real. Is that online or what's going on?
Nah, the footage is sitting somewhere. I have a friend. He actually works in television now. He was the guy who was behind the production and everything. And lo and behold, he ended up an executive producer in television. Right. The VHS tapes would be at his house somewhere.
Oh, I got you. I got you. It's, you have your own missing episode, right?
Well, I do. In fact, I told this story recently. I have another missing episode. When Doctor Who was screening around 1988 here in Australia, they would, before the show, they'd have a little, they'd call it the afternoon show, and they'd have people right. on, guests and so on, and they did a Doctor Who quiz before Remembrance of the Daleks, and I was on that Doctor Who quiz dressed as Peter Davison. And recently I thought, you know what? It would be great to get that footage and I could maybe pull the audio and I'll do a little story on the podcast about being the Doctor on this quiz. Well, I wasn't the Doctor, I was me dressed as the Doctor, but I was on the quiz.
But yeah, it's as good as.
And I got in contact with the ABC, you know, our version of the BBC.
Yeah, of course, all PCs, yeah.
Yeah, I said, here's the date, here's the show, here's everything I need, what have you got? And much like Patrick Troughton, I've been junked. They've junked most episodes of that afternoon show for the entire year, I was told. So,
really?
So unfortunately, I'll have to find someone who's still got a VHS of Remembrance from 1988.
Yeah. Maybe your episode is in sort of Nigeria or something, and there'll be rumors of it being in a war-torn warehouse and... Someone will say they have it, and then someone says they don't, and, you know, fandom will erupt. So maybe it could work out.
It could do.
Yeah. I often wonder about those rumors just going slightly kind of on, off topic. But do you remember all those crazy rumors about there was the retrieval of basically all of the missing episodes, and there were things flying around between the major players in the missing episode hunt. Remember all that a few months back? It was more than a few months back.
Because
I don't know, I'll think about that.
I was going to say, I guess the rumor was they had got a lot of film and they had to go through it, so they weren't sure if they had it. They might have it.
Right. And then I remember one of the major players... was saying that there was obviously a little bit of a rivalry going on. And he seemed to be under the impression that one of the other major players had everything, but was trying to influence the management to make certain decisions regarding the new series before he give them back, which I thought sounded so ridiculously crazy to me. But he was trying to, he was openly saying he has them. But he wants something, and what he wants is pretty crazy, and the BBC are obviously not going to give him that. So I remember it all became something that I thought, wow, you could probably write a story about this.
Oh, for sure. I think in time, maybe they will, you know, once the whole story comes out.
Yeah. I'd also like to see some explanation about Eccleston's, you know, departure. I'd love to see that in, like, a book or something like that, because I think that's also quite mysterious as well. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Rob.
No, not at all. And in fact, on Eccleston, he says, you know, he left because it was an unprofessional environment or something like that. And I think, gosh, well, you know, Tennant came into the same environment and lasted a few years. So either he put up with it or it changed, or maybe it wasn't as bad as Eccleston thought. You know, what is the truth? I don't know.
Yeah, well, Christopher Eccleston, he's from the north of England. And my mum is from a place called Leeds. Mm-hmm. Eccleston's he's from Lancashire because he's from Manchester, whereas on the other side of the border, you've got Yorkshire. And he is very, very ardent. They're a bit no-nonsense from the north of England. They don't take any nonsense, and they've got a lot of views which they hold to be rather you know, steadfast, and they won't be challenged on these things, and they've got like a moral sort of compass. Not meaning to say that other people from other areas don't, but he often talks about his family and not doing anything to, you know, to sort of like upset them, and he was brought up a certain way, and he's got a value system. So it all became rather deep, which is the point I'm making, you know, like quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving away from the audio realm for a moment, but sticking with the audios, if I can put it this way.
Sure.
When you go to conventions, you often dress in your Doctor's style of clothing from the episodes. And I guess, where did your costume ideas come from? I mean, the striped shirt. I don't think we've seen a striped shirt on a doctor before. Where did you get the idea for the sort of clothes your doctor would wear?
Well, it's quite... these are excellent questions, because they often, like the flashback question, because they're often, the answer is often a bone of contention that Mike and I throw backwards and forwards, which is, that's why I'm laughing, because I'm getting a chuckle out of them. Those clothes, they're just mine, and I got myself a waistcoat, and I just thought, you know what, I like waistcoats, no one seems to wear them, I'm going to track one down, and I got this waistcoat. And I went to, we went to a show in Hamilton, and Mike said, wear something. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to go naked, Mike. That would not be a draw for anybody. And we will certainly get arrested, and I would be charged with crimes against humanity. There must be some kind of naked, you know, Geneva Convention or something. And he said, wear something. Now, he was after me, like, wearing, like a scarf or something. Now, there's no way I'm doing hours wearing anything hot, because I'm a Scot. We're not used to the heat. So I showed up one morning, and I thought, I'll put the waistcoat on, put the shirt on, and, you know, Bob's your uncle. I jump out the car, and he's like, perfect. So it kind of created this thing. So I thought, right, I seem to have my outfit now. I seem to have my Doctor Who outfit, and I have to wear it to keep Mike happy. But that's basically it. It's just my clothes, really.
Oh, that's great.
It's just my clothes. But, you know, it's nothing. I don't wear things with question marks on and things like that. But I must admit, I now go. We recently did the huge Toronto Comic Con. And I must admit, I wear the outfit now. I look at pictures, and I've always got it on. And I also have, like, a Sonic. Once again, anyone who's played the Doctor, all the wonderful fans who've played the, you know, him and run around in the woods, it gets into you a little bit. I was always a bit of an eccentric before Doctor Who, probably influenced by him in ways that I didn't even know. But when you start to become, you know, writing and acting, or trying to act and trying to write, you venture out into that. It does infuse you with something. I realized this when I was at work one day, shortly after Mike and I had thrown this around, and I thought, oh, I'm gonna be playing the Doctor. And someone said something to me about a problem at work, and I found myself blurting out, listen to me, I am the answers man. I have the answers. And I thought to myself, you're going a bit nuts with the spirit of the Doctor. And once again, that's always stayed with me, and that's going to be a huge part of our next project, which will be coming out later this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen that kind of thing before. I was in the 501st Legion, the Star Wars costumers. I'm not in it anymore, but when I was in it, you know, you'd be sitting there with people who are doing Darth Vader or, you know, other characters.
Sure.
And you'd see the guy doing Vader put on... He'd be in most of the gear, then he'd put on the helmet and then walk outside to the kids. And you'd think, he's even walking differently all of a sudden. Does he know he's walking differently?
Yes. It's one of those things. It has an effect on you, the spirit of the character. And as a person who's involved in it, and as a writer, I think to myself, that's kind of interesting. Because I started thinking, what would happen if a guy who was having real life problems, you know, suddenly had to play the Doctor in some audio production that was being recorded, you know, for next to nothing in, let's just say, his, you know, basement or something. What is the dramatic and the comedic effect of that on a guy who, let's call him Fred or something, and he's playing the Doctor, but his whole life is going to pieces? I think exactly the same thing. It's like they become a certain way, you know, a certain way. So who did you cosplay as when you were in the Legion?
When I was in the Legion, my main costume was an Imperial officer.
Right. So, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, I actually had the black version, you know.
So the black version, yeah.
Yeah, you've got the black...
Julian Glover? Was he the black costume?
Which one, sorry?
Julian Glover, you know, the actor Julian Glover?
Oh, he may have had a... Oh,
Oh, you're stumping me now.
Yeah,
yeah, but you've got the green and the grey and the black, and I think I think the black might be the army and the green might be the navy. The grey is the navy, I think. Anyway, I'm getting down a rabbit hole there. Yeah, no, I had the black Imperial Officer garb, and my wife had the green one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so...
Nice couple, very official.
Yeah, they call them soft costumes in the Legion because they're obviously not armour, and you can actually sit down in chairs and stuff when you want to have a break, so they're quite nice to wear. The trade-off, though, is that your face is uncovered so people can make eye contact and talk to you, and sometimes they will say strange things to you or even abusive things to you, and that's a bit harder to take.
That's interesting. Like what? What did they say that's funny and abusive?
Oh, you know, like, you know, there'll always be the people who have been clearly dragged to a convention with their partner and they're not as into it as the partner. And so they'll just get around, you know, snickering at people in costumes. Yeah, you're a bit old for that, aren't you? You know, that kind of attitude.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing how UGIT's become, and it's amazing how it's almost sort of like it's almost trendy, you know, to be like, oh yeah, you know, he's a nerd and she's a geek, and then they use these, you know, use these terms for things. I mean, whereas I've been that way my whole life, but now it's become such a movement. I mean, when we did the Comic Con a few months back, I couldn't believe the extravagant costumes that were available, and people were dressed up in everything was an eye-catching spectacle, and the work involved was just incredible, and it was amazing. It's a fascinating sort of subculture.
Oh, definitely, and I totally get where you're coming from. In fact, in the realm of gaming, which is very similar, I often have to explain to people, I was a gamer before we even used to call ourselves gamers.
Yeah.
You know, now it's this big thing to be a gamer, but I've kind of always done that.
Yes. It's like now it's a big thing. And like I said, it's almost like a trendy thing. And but it wasn't always that way. It was the true meaning of it. And, you know, you sort of kept it hidden away. I remember, do you remember the Virgin Who novels, The New Adventures?
I do.
Well, I had them. And I was reading them at work in Leeds. And I thought to myself, I can't let anyone see me reading a Doctor Who book. Because even though it was The New Adventures, it was still Doctor Who. It was McCoy. They launched them with McCoy. And what I did was I got myself a cover, a plastic cover, put it around the paperback. And then I thought to myself, right, I'm going to have to cover it up. So I got brown paper. And used it to cover the book. Now you can see where this is going, right? So we had a circle, and back then they didn't segregate people who smoked. So everyone sat in a circle, and the women used to come up, and they used to smoke incessantly. So I'd have a human chimney next to me, and I'd be reading my book incessantly. And they used to teach. I didn't realize this at the time, being a young, naive whippersnapper, not knowing the ways of the world. But the women there used to go, oh, now then, Andy, what you reading? And of course, the voices were all smoke infested, and I'd be there going, "Oh, I'm just a book, and why has it got a brown cover on it? Is it a naughty book? You're reading a naughty book. Hey, Andy's reading a naughty book," and I'd be like mortified because they thought I was reading something like The Erotic Adventures of a Window Cleaner or something, but really, I was reading Time Worm by Terence Dix, right? And I thought I'd rather be known for reading some erotic book like a that day 50 Shades of Grey than reading a Doctor Who book. And the irony of it struck me. I thought, that's ridiculous. Yeah. But it kind of, that's the way you felt. You didn't shout about it too much.
I remember those days very clearly. It must seem so alien to someone who's, say, I don't know, 20 years of age now and getting down the street in their TARDIS shoes or whatever. And you know, no way would you have done that in the 80s or early 90s. No way.
Oh, no, never. I mean, you know, guys like me, we got by on a sense of humor, you know, and making people laugh, and because we were always picked last for the football team or whatever, you know. There was always that sense of athletic failure. I was actually not a bad runner, because of all my lack of success in like team sort of sports.
Mm-hmm.
So because I was so appallingly bad at rugby and football, I thought I'll run because running is good and I could run. So I had a little bit of athletic success. But I know exactly what you mean. I was at HMV a few months ago and I was buying some TARDIS ice cube trays. That should tell you everything about the event. So I'm buying some and I'm at the cashier's place and the girl says to me, "You're a Doctor Who fan, eh?" She says, "Eh," because she's Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yep, I certainly am." And she proudly exposed her arm to me. And there was a tattoo, which has become another huge thing, another sort of subculture. And all along her arm, her forearm, was a tattoo of a sonic screwdriver.
Wow.
Literally to scale. And she showed this off to me. And then she flipped her arm around. I'm actually doing this like a complete moron on microphone. This is the way I act. And she flipped her arm. I know, I'm moving here like anyone can see it. What an absolute fool. And she flipped her arm around. And she had the seal of Rassilon on her arm.
Wow.
So I'm buying ice cube trays in the shape of TARDISes. They've got TARDIS robes, towels, anything you want. And this girl's like, "Hey, you know, like you know, I'm a Who fan as well. Look at this. It's a badge of honor."
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this has become huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge. And I'm absolutely overjoyed because it's fantastic. I don't consider it to be like a cheapening of anything. If it's out there and it's enjoyed by people, then, you know, long may it live.
Absolutely. The next couple of questions I've got here are kind of similar, and they do merge into each other, and we've kind of touched on them already. But I'll mention them both, because I think there's maybe a little bit more information I can get out of you on these two topics.
You should all see.
The first is, you know, we've heard a few episodes from this series, and you've obviously got thoughts for another series, but have you ever had thoughts for a Christmas special? The second question is, are there other IPs you'd like to have a crack at in future audios?
Ooh, okay. So, yeah, it's a themed question. You guys must be a very, very high-class outfit to have a themed question. That's interesting. You have a story arc with questions. That's impressive. Right. That's impressive. Right. A Christmas special? Not really. Mike had me doing some emergency recording for some kind of a speech thing that we put out, which he wrote, and I thought was excellent. He had this whole thing about the Doctor doing a speech on Christmas Day for the Noble Project, and I thought that was brilliant. We did that last Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
A Christmas special this year? No, but you may have created something with this question. So as far as future stuff is concerned, anyone listening to the conclusion in a few weeks will have a very, very clear idea of what a possible season 3 would sound like, because there may or may not be a trailer for it.
Ooh.
Which will give you a very, very clear idea, or it may not do, of where the Doctor and his companions would be going, or may not, for the duration of season 3, and there may or may not be other characters in there, and there may or may not be the return of iconic villains, and there may or may not be anything. But season 3 is something that is mapped out. So the answer to that question is yes, may or may not. And the immediate other project we've got following this is the celebration of fandom, and the effects it has on people. And that will be, that's basically, in the planning stages now. We've got 6 episodes, probably about 15 minutes, each.
Mm-hmm.
There might be a live ending for this, which is the one I spoke about earlier on, and this will be the effect on a guy, a normal guy, going through a lot of problems in his life, and the effect of being the Doctor and trying to produce an audio drama with his pal while his wife has basically left him and his whole life is going, you know, to heck. So this is something which is quite good. And his wife is actually a big Star Wars fan in the show. So that's not the reason they split up. The reason they split up is a very real reason, actually, which is what we're trying to do, is we're trying to make it real without going, you know, into overly dramatic territory. So that would be Derek Who. It's a play on Doctor Who, but obviously Derek Who works, because who is Derek is basically the question of the story. So that would be the next thing. And we're looking forward to that, actually. We're looking immensely. Not that we don't look forward to Dark Journey, but it's good to do something new.
Well, that sounds very interesting. And if there are couples out there who are one half Star Wars and one half Doctor Who Wars can bring you together. There's a little...
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Rob and I will be available for marriage counseling. For all you guys out there, if you're having problems with your lightsabers or anything like that, then come to us. And between Canada and Australia, we can look after you and make sure everything's okay. May the TARDIS be with you.
Exactly right.
Exactly.
Shall we get on to some general Doctor Who now?
Absolutely. I'm loving this. This is fantastic.
My pleasure. Well, first question is, when did you get into Doctor Who and why? Can you remember your first episodes even?
Yes, I can. I remember vividly at the age of about 4. So people can work out that I am 45. Mm-hmm. Rushing in, it was in Scotland. We were moving house, and I rushed in to watch the last few episodes of Planet of the Spiders, John Pertwee. Mm-hmm. And I sat on a box in front of the TV, and my dad was always telling me that my eyes would go because I was so close to the TV.
Yep.
But I couldn't see him because I was so close to the TV, my eyes had gone. But my hearing was fine, so I could hear him. And I watched Planet of the Spiders, and then by the time we moved in, he'd gone. John Pertwee had gone. Mm-hmm. And Robot happened a few months later. And I remember watching Robot with this lunatic in the hat and the scarf and the teeth and the eyes. And I just thought, this isn't my Doctor. I don't know what's going on. Where's John Pertwee? And having a bit of a... I remember saying to my mum, like, what's going on and all this kind of stuff. But of course, you know, it's the classic situation, you know, at the end of the episode one of Robot, you know, Tom Baker's the Doctor. So that's how long I've been a fan. It's gone through ups and downs, of course. I've not always been a fan. I remember I went off and I got a house with a friend of mine, and we were doing the whole, you know, kind of like, we're moving out and blah, blah, blah. We don't need our parents except to do our laundry and to give us money and to show us emotional support. But apart from that, we're independent. We're going out. We're going to get scores of girlfriends. And of course, we didn't. And shortly after we got the place, the pad, which all these wonderful things would happen, I found myself watching Remembrance of the Daleks on my own. So that goes to show you about those ambitions. So who's always been around? I remember shortly after I came over to Canada, I literally had to break into my aunt and uncle's place, who were out, to set their VHS to record the McGann movie, because we lived in apartments and the movie was out, but our TV wasn't hooked up, because I've now been in Canada almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. I had no access to watch it, and I knew it was coming out because, you know, Fox were running these ridiculous American... The Doctor is back, and it's about time. Fox were going bananas. It was like, tonight, the TV movie, Doctor Who. And they were really going crazy. And it showed you Eric Roberts and McGann, and they had this new music, and it looked all kind of like, my God, there was money and there were sound effects. And I thought, I can't watch it. Mm-hmm. I can't. Actually, my aunt and uncle were on holiday in Florida. So I had to go to building management and say, I need to get into my aunt and uncle's place. And they said to me, you can't do that. We know you're the nephew, but we can't do that. I said, listen, I have to get in there. And they said, we can't, Andrew. We can't just go letting you in because you're the nephew. So basically, when they turned their back, I took the key to get into my aunt and uncle's place, ran up the stairs, opened the door, went to a place where I knew the spare key was, because the spare key was supposed to be picked up by me, but wasn't. And then I went down, so now I had the spare key. So I guess I would have been charged with breaking and entering to see the McGann movie as well. when it came back, I sat in front of the TV, and I remember it now. I literally had, when the music started up with Eccleston, and they did these brilliant intros on the CBC with Christopher Eccleston, which I recorded, and Mike and I put them out as some kind of anniversary special thing.
Yes, and Mike slipped them to me recently in a more recent episode.
Yeah, I recorded that, yeah.
Oh, and, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was great. I've never seen them on YouTube. But I remember when it was on CBC, and I realized it was on, and we watched it, I literally kind of had tears in my eyes when the music opened out after this wonderful Eccleston introduction. It has a huge effect on me, does the show. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But it can have a really serious effect on people as well, which is something I'm very interested in.
Absolutely. If we roll back to the TV movie, though, you went to all that trouble to record it. But yes. What happened when you actually watched it? What did you think the first time?
I was crying again, but maybe not for the right reasons. No, sorry, I'm employing a cheap joke there. I loved it. I thought it was good. I thought it was different. People go on about the master can't be a worm going through a keyhole, but the master can be anything he likes. We've seen that, for God's sake. He's now a woman, which I don't literally go along with, but people should loosen up a little bit. It was a little bit Americanized. It was a little bit self-indulgent from the writing point of view. I felt it alienated a lot of would-be new audience members, and it should have been going for new audience as opposed to you need to know about regeneration, otherwise you don't understand why this guy has been shot. A dubious end for a doctor as well. And regenerated, and the opening dialogue is all about the Master and the Daleks and Scarrow. From a writing point of view, and I don't like to criticize because I don't believe it's fair, but from a writing point of view, I think it was mired in the show continuity, and I felt for a North American audience they're not going to get it. I think it also aired against an episode of Roseanne where John Goodman had a heart attack and some TV movie about a typhoon gone wild starring Billy Zane or something. So it was up against it right from the word go, but I still like it. I was glad to get the DVD and watch all the preparation that they put into it. And there's a really good book that I encourage people. Old Man Chalmers is encouraging the youngsters to read books. But I would. There's a really good book called Regeneration.
Yes.
Fantastic book. I actually bought it at Harrods in London, my dear Rob.
Oh, very posh.
Yes, I bought it at Harrods in London. And I read it on the book. I read it on the book reading the train. No, I didn't. I read it on the train reading the book on the way home to Leeds because we were on holiday over here. That's fantastic as well, and it gives you things like Christopher Lloyd as the Master, and basically anyone in American television as the Doctor or the Master. But it's very interesting. I think my name was up for the Eighth Doctor at one stage.
It is a good book. I have it here. I like the the sketches for what they might have done for the story on Gallifrey, and there are Daleks and all sorts of fun stuff, and you know, stuff we never actually saw on screen. There's some really interesting stuff in there.
There's a weaponized big monster Dalek, which I think some fans have made one. It's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. A big monstrous, fantastic look for a Dalek. And I love what they did with the Cybermen as well, because the Cybermen look clearly human. The faces look a bit scary. Remember those guys?
I do, yeah.
They look very kind of skeleton-ish.
Yeah.
I really feel as though the Cybermen, they should. I think Capaldi had an idea to have the 10th planet Cybermen, the original ones. And I think it would be good because I would love to see the humanity behind the Cybermen. I think it would be fantastic to kind of strip away the Cybermen and the stomping feet and get to that twisted humanity. I know sometimes they hinted at a Cyberman and it's saying something about its previous life. Mm-hmm. I actually thought that I always had a vision of a Cyberman, like in the shadows, sort of a medieval town at night, and the Cyberman is kind of skulking around, very human-like, and then we go wide, which is very easy to do on audio, and the Cyberman has a baby, and the Cyberman's running along the streets of a village, and there's like a Frankensteinish mob pursuing him. Get the giant, he's stolen our baby, and blah blah blah. And I always thought that would be a great idea, and the idea that the Cyberman would have been the mother of the child when the person was human, but now had regained these memories and had come back into this village to take away her child. Maybe that's a trailer for season 3. I don't know.
That's maybe a great idea there.
Yeah, well, thank you. Maybe that's a trailer for a trailer that may or may not exist. I don't know. I don't want to say too much.
Just while you're talking too about seeing Cybermen in earlier times, there is a big Finnish audio. It's a Fifth Doctor story called Spare Parts, which people out there might like. Yeah.
Yeah, I've listened to it. It's like Genesis of the Cybermen, isn't it?
Precisely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Quite. Yeah, it's fantastic. I listened to it one night. I ordered it, actually. I ordered quite a few Big Finish because I think they're great. I mean, you know, they also kept the show alive in a huge fashion, an absolutely huge fashion. And it's really, really good. But like all that stuff is really fantastic.
Yeah, my biggest complaint about Big Finish is there's too much of it, which is, you know, what a horrible complaint to have. a horrible problem to have.
I know what you mean. It was like when people said to me, hey, have you seen 24? And I thought, people are just getting excited about numbers now. They need to really expand their creative horizons. No, have you seen Vowels? I love Vowels. And then I realized it was a show on Fox 29. But, like, I'm not going to live that long to check out 5 seasons of 24. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Especially not now.
Yeah.
But if the box sets the right price, I'll pick it up and it'll sit with my other things that I haven't seen. But, hey, it was cheap. What do you want from me?
Who would you say is your doctor, and do you have a favorite era? And these might not necessarily be the same thing. For example, my doctor is Davison, but I like the gothic Hinchcliffe era, like your Pyramids of Mars, Brain of Morbius kind of era. So you might have a different doctor to your favorite era, or they might be the same.
Right.
What's yours?
So I'm just thinking about what you said there, because for a guy who talks a lot, I do try and listen. So your ideal world would be the Fifth Doctor in those adventures?
Oh, I'm not sure he'd sit well in those adventures. It's just
it's very innocuous, isn't he?
I grew up, you know, the Fifth Doctor is the one I sort of grew up with, you know, because I was born in 75, so I was around until, you know, the age of 5 or 6 in the Tom Baker era. But then once I'm grown up a little bit more, it's kind of the younger Doctor, the Peter Davison Doctor, the guy I was watching on All Creatures Great and Small.
Oh,
I sort of gravitated more towards him.
Tristram. That's how his announcement as the Doctor was made to me by my mum. My mum was in England at the time and I was in Canada. And she says, hey, you know who the new Doctor is? And I said, no. She goes, it's Tristram from All Creatures Great and Small. And I was like, oh, that'll be good. He'll be able to, you know, like look after birthing cows in the TARDIS and stuff.
Exactly right.
I met him once, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I met Peter Davison at a UK show in Toronto. And he signed my VHS Castrovalva and the Caves of Androzani.
Oh, excellent.
Now, obviously, you'll be able to pick up on the relevance of those two stories. It's his first and his last.
Of course.
But the funny thing about it was, and actually what I'll do is I'll arrange for you to get the picture. I was getting he signed everything and I was very nervous. I was shaking like an autumn leaf. And he said to me, he said, oh, the VHS. And I'm like, oh, yes, yes, Peter, and all this kind of stuff, right? And then I said, can we get a picture? And he's like, yeah, no problem. So we get a picture taken, and Linda, my wife, was taking it, and it was back in the day, right? So it wasn't digital. So I'm trying to get all like next to him, and I said to him, I said, he looked at me and he looked a bit alarmed, and he said to me, and I said to him, don't worry, I'm not trying to kiss you. And then at this moment in time, he looks like completely shocked, because I think he thought that I was, but I was lying to him, but I wasn't. And the picture was taken at that moment in time with me talking to him and him looking at the camera completely like shocked. I'll send you this picture.
I would love to see that.
I'll send you this picture. But going on to the answer to your question, I would have to say Everybody Loves Raymond. Oh, no, sorry. Wrong time stream.
Yes.
I would have to say my favorite era is Hinchcliffe.
Yeah.
Because it pushed the boat out. Like, you couldn't even see the boat. The boat was gone. And I felt that that obviously Tom Baker had really established himself in the role. And it just, the complete range of stories, Robots of Death, Seeds of Doom, all that stuff. I mean, Robots of Death is such a wonderful work. Talons of Wang Chiang and all the rest of it. It was all this Hammer horror stuff, you know. But he would be that particular, his doctor at that time would also be my favorite as well. Because I kind of meshed the story and the era with the doctor. I don't think... he's my favorite doctor, with all due respect to the other ones. I was asked a question in an interview a few weeks ago about who my favorite doctor is and all his business. And I said to them, I said, really, I'm not really up. I get a little bit upset about who the favorite doctor is. I know this happened after Sylvester McCoy sent me a letter saying that I was his least favorite fan. He was very upset with me. He didn't like the way I was a fan. He didn't like the way I applauded him. So I think they should get their own back and be able to say, well, as a fan, you kind of suck. I don't like the way you stack my VHS collection.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Hinchcliffe era, I mean, I don't remember snatches of dialogue from anything. You know, I don't do that Monty Python thing people do at parties where if they hear you like Monty Python, they start doing routines. I can't do it. I can't do that stuff. But no, I can remember.
Those people are a bit wild now. No.
They are. But I can remember dialogue, like from Talons of Wang Chiang, like when the doctor says to Leela, if you're very good, I'll give you an orange.
Yeah.
Or in Robots of Death, when one of the robots says, don't throw hands at me. You know,
yes. Yeah,
random weird stuff I remember vividly from that era like no other.
Yes, yes. I can't actually, which makes it a delight when we watch it. There is some line from The Horror of Fang Rock where he says to the collected people in the lighthouse something along the lines of, by the time morning comes, we might all be dead. He says something ridiculous like that. And I know on one of the DVD menus for Baker... he's with Sarah, I think, and they're in the TARDIS, and the TARDIS is doing all that classic rocking stuff. Mm-hmm. And he goes, stand by for emergency materialization. And his eyes absolutely look like a madman.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I like stuff like that. I like stuff. But that Horror of Fang Rock line, or whatever, I just butchered it or something. But that's the one that I remember, yeah. And that's the kind of stuff that maybe we get a little bit more with Capaldi. I don't know, but I think Tom Baker, the way it was written and his take on the character, sometimes with Capaldi, it almost came off as him being a little bit cruelish, but I don't think cruelish should ever be linked with being alien.
Mm.
I think Baker brought an alienish quality to it where he could be excused for thinking that because of the way he performed the line. Whereas Capaldi, a couple of times, I thought was coming off as maybe lacking sentiment, even though I did love it.
Yeah.
Even though I did love it.
Well, looking at this new series that they're making at the moment, the word is that the Doctor has evolved a little more. His relationship with Clara is different. He is different. And even in the pictures we're seeing, he's letting his hair get a bit bigger, Pertwee style.
His hair is wild. His hair is like a special effect in itself.
and I've seen him in this sort of wine red, almost velvet-like jacket, and I'm thinking, oh, it's very Pertwee-esque. So I'm really curious to see what they're doing. He's looking like Pertwee, but maybe he'll have more of that Baker feel, because, that's the kind of feel I got from him in the previous series when he was being a bit odd.
Yes, yeah. He's also been rocking some Troughton trousers. Have you seen those?
Yes, the tartan trousers.
Yeah, because there's rumours flying around about an episode or two at Loch Ness.
Ah.
Now everyone's jumping on the Zygons, which is not advisable because you'll fall right off because they're very slimy.
I thought the suckers might grab you.
They don't like it. Do not is that listen right? up. Between me and you and your millions of listeners, do not listen. You kiddies at home, do not jump on a Zygon. They hate it. Even during mating season, do not do it.
Good advice.
Yes, exactly. But there's rumors flying about Loch Ness because Moffat's infused with a little bit of the Scottish. Mm-hmm. You may have noticed.
just a bit,
perhaps, in deep breath. Which was almost like a Time Lord ad for the referendum vote.
Yes.
Exactly. And eyebrows, of course. But, I know what you mean. I think he'll be... I never liked the idea of the Doctor having, like, short hair. I think his hair... I think it worked for Eccleston. But I think once you've got the Doctor established, I think the Doctor should be a little bit eccentric looking. He doesn't have to be overboard. But he should be someone who's like, oh, he's got, like, an edge to him.
When he got the role, he had sort of long-ish hair, and I thought, oh, this will look spectacular. And then his early episodes, they'd cut it right back, and I was like, oh, no, that's not right.
I think, I know what you mean. I think, and sometimes in certain episodes, it was long and short. Did you catch any of that?
In the same episode, yeah. Magic.
There's a scene, I think it's in Flatline, where he's in the TARDIS and the TARDIS is shrunk and he's doing that little hand thing, which is very funny. But those scenes, miraculous, not only has the TARDIS been shrunk, but his hair's got shorter as well. So that's something that Mike and I will be doing in season 3. We're doing a lot with the Doctor's hair in the TARDIS because you can do that on audio.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I'm presently speaking to you, I have a pink Mohican.
Very nice. That's very in this year.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely. It's all the rage over here in Canada. That and igloos. So I think they had it short because he's supposed to be stern, and you can't possibly have a guy with eccentric looking hair who is, you know, like who's a bit stern, who's a taskmaster. So I think we'll see more of that because you know what? Sometimes I think we see more of the Doctor in Capaldi's interviews than sometimes we do when he's playing the Doctor. Do you ever think that?
He has a touch of the Doctor about him, yeah.
He's an eccentric guy. He did a wonderful video for a young man who was sick. And he'd obviously recorded it, I presume, in his house. And he'd sent it to him and he said, Clara and I were looking at you. People in the world are looking after you. And he's doing all this kind of stuff. And I thought he sounds more like a Time Lord when he's being normal, which, as we know, is the key to casting a Doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that, yeah, I find that interesting. I would love to see him singing because he's a musician. You know, Capaldi was in a punk band with Craig Ferguson. I'd love to see him, if it was me, I'd be writing him to, you know, sing something or play a guitar or something. Did you see that? Which brings me to the point here.
Yes.
No, it doesn't bring me to the point because I'm just making this up as I go along. Did you see that clip of him playing a guitar?
I've seen a GIF of it. Yes, a moving GIF. So I thought there must be a video somewhere.
Someone did some very nice artwork of the Doctor that was inspired by Capaldi. It said it was inspired by this, and he's got that maroon jacket on that I love, and I know you do.
Mm.
And he's rocking out on a Les Paul, and I'm thinking, well, this is interesting. Like, I think he'll be lighter, and I think they've said, right, now that you're not the taskmaster, let the hair go a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see a more relaxed kind of a more relaxed Doctor. I personally feel as though this could be like, after all the questions that he must have as an actor, I think he's going to have a lot of answers in the next season. I think it could be quite a tour de force, actually.
Are you happy that Clara's back?
Well, there's my answer. Any answer that starts with that. I feel her story's been done.
Yeah.
To be honest, I can understand from a show running point of view, keeping her around, and she's very popular and stuff like that. There was that whole thing about, is she leaving? And I think in the Christmas special, I could detect when I watched it that, okay, if she wasn't leaving, she might pass away as an old lady. Mm-hmm. And if she's staying, we just write another scene where she's off in the doctor with the doctor in the TARDIS. So, yeah. I think the answer is yes, I am, because I am glad she's around, because at the end of the day, it's all about the writing, and there's no reason that you can't do an interesting storyline for her. And I thought season 8 was her most interesting storyline. I think it grounded her in a way which it grounded Rose in season 1. There's a domestic thing. She's got a boyfriend, you know, Danny Pink, who I thought was brilliant. She's a teacher. All that stuff about her being the governoress and all this business, I didn't feel it gave her a root. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the challenge of New Who. I always sound like I'm crying when I say that, New Who. it's okay, Andrew, don't be upset. But I think the challenge of writing New Who is that RTD had it right on the nose. His episode, we were talking about the movie earlier on, his episode was completely written from the point of view of the companion, and the doctor runs in going, run! And then we were introduced to the doctor through the companion's eyes. Whereas Matthew Jacobs, who I believe wrote the TV movie, came at it from, you better know something about this before you start watching it. Mm-hmm. And with all due respect, it didn't really work. But I think you have all the ideas, all the new ideas now in modern Who have been done. So coming in, what do you do? Yeah. You know, because if I do a companion and she's got an Earth story, I'm doing the Rose storyline again. Okay, I'll make her a little bit different. People don't like that either. But I think whatever you do, you have to root the companion. You have to have a story. It might not be on Earth, but you have to root the story emotionally for that companion. Splintered through time and all this, like, I don't know. It became a bit much. Influencing William Hartnell to take a TARDIS, which was obviously contradicted the events of the Doctor's wife.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little bit sloppy for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has the potential to maybe be her best series yet, and I think it'll surely have to be her last. Because you think, well, she's been the impossible girl. She saved the Doctor in every incarnation. She's had this big love affair with Danny Pink. She's broken up with the Doctor and just hated him. She's had this whole life and become an old woman and done all these wonderful things.
Yes.
Now she's young again and we're into another series. What is there left to do? And if they write it right, if I can put it that way, if they write it right...
I understand. Write it right. Right.
It could be really good, because maybe we've got all that stuff out of the way and we'll just have a really great companion for this series. But I think there will be a bit of fan feeling that what else is there for her to do? Why is she still here? And I always like to see doctors with different companions, so I've already got a bit of that sort of built into my brain that I'd kind of like to see Capaldi bouncing off someone different, you know, and maybe he will later in this series, you know, some of the spy photos are to be believed, but, you know, we shall see.
I know what you mean. I don't think the young lady from Game of Thrones is going to be a companion, but at the end of the day, I mean, obviously, I don't know anything.
I'm thinking more the guy from Flatline.
Riggsy or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting situation. I mean, sort of, why is he back and things like that. I mean, the thing about Who, which is so interesting, is I think it's an immense, it's immensely challenging to even think about writing something like that. It's now been 10 years and the show's never been as strong as it has been before or popular. So obviously there's numerous things that are going on. But I'm the same with you. I would personally like to see the Doctor have an alien companion. And I don't mean alien as in some one-eyed blue thing in the TARDIS. Not that. But I mean a person from another... It's an alien on a BBC budget, which basically means it's someone from London who wears a funny-looking sweatshirt, has a funny nose. But the people who... Or, you know, the people from Star Trek, if I should mention Star Trek. I've heard Star Trek has a following. But with the ridged noses, anyone was an alien had a ridged nose.
That's right. That's right.
And that enabled you to fall in love with an alien. It was like, my God, they don't have three tentacles. You don't have all the mating problems you do with Zygons.
You know, the biggest lost opportunity in Who? And that was the concept of chameleon. And they're like, okay, so he's a robot. Oh, but we can't get the robot to work. Oh, let's just write him out of it. And it's like, no, dudes. He can look like anyone. You could have a different looking companion every episode and just pretend it's a robot. Problem solved. Yeah. And they never did it.
Robot master kind of thing, you know. Yeah. Except you could actually disguise him in a way. I don't know. I'd never heard this before about our friend Chameleon, who Mike and I often have a bit of a laugh about. But Joshua Hemming, who's the wonderful, he's our John Williams, really. Mm-hmm. And he did, as well as being a fantastic sound designer and a great guy. He's a William Hartnell fan. Josh did the sound engineering and the music for episodes 1, 2, and 6. And we put the soundtrack on the website. Anyone, it's free to download if you love his music, and thousands of people do. But we did an interview with Josh once, and he blurted out this account that the guy who invented Chameleon for the BBC, because it was a real robot kind of thing, actual prop, right?
Yeah.
Joshua went on to wax lyrical about the fact that the guy or the chap who invented Chameleon actually passed away, and no one knew how to operate Chameleon.
Huh.
And that's how Chameleon ended up being, oh, Chameleon's short-circuited, we'll stick him in the storeroom, and then we'll go deal with another one of the Master's crap disguises, which everybody can see. That was the thing. He was supposed to be, he was the only person who knew. And I thought, how sad.
Yeah.
I thought, what a sad thing. Like, I felt like the whole story from, you know, Chameleon's point of view. You know, like he's this robot that's just his originator and his creator doesn't know he's passed away. And I guess it's the classic robot story, really. But it was quite sad, I thought, really, that Chameleon was just knackered because of this and no one knew how to work him.
Yeah, that is sad. That is.
Yeah. Don't want to bring down the mood there. Sorry, listeners. Sorry, listeners.
I just do wish there were some episodes, though, where someone new walked into the TARDIS console room. Maybe there's a bit of a sparkly effect over them for a few seconds, and the Doctor says, oh, Chameleon, you're looking like this person today or something. And you just pretend that's Chameleon.
Yeah, like what's... I mean, you can't have him running around as a robot all the time.
Mm.
But... He was a lost opportunity. I know Big Finish have even done. Have they not done Frobisher?
They have, yes.
You see, I mean, how brilliant is that? I mean, there's audio for you right there, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I think we've got Jessica Rabbit in season 3, but Mike's concerned about the carrots. But yeah, it's what a wonderful idea. You can do anything you like, which is good. But I'd like to see him with an alien companion. I actually thought that the characters that were in Time Heist, the bank, like the Ocean's 11 episode with Capaldi. I think it was Capaldi's 5th or 6th episode. 5th, I think. I thought they would have been good as companions. The guy with the circuit in his neck and the other young lady who could do certain things. I don't know, just something, throwing it else a little bit out there. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing, to be a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, well, I like cyberpunk kind of stories. So to have that guy as a companion who could, you know, maybe jack into computers when they're in alien ships and stuff. Fantastic, you know, great.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great, but still having a story for him, some kind of emotional attachment for the audience, which is what it's about. And initially I felt Clara was, first of all, I felt like she was the female version of Rory. She was always dying, or you know, Kenny from South Park. And then after, I didn't know what was going on, really. I mean, she's a governess, and then she's serving beer in a pub in London, and I didn't really work that out. But they had too much. She had too much of an effect on the doctor's life. I recognize those kind of channels you can take a story, but sometimes I think they're best avoided. But you know, who am I to upset an OBE? Congratulations to Stephen Moffat, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a surprise, actually, when he got that. I thought, oh, very nice.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, at the end, I think it's very hard to be a writer of, you know, the criticism and the craziness that people open up to when they do something like that. It takes someone very brave, you know, to do that and to put their own... I mean, imagine being tasked with writing the 50th anniversary. Imagine how you'd feel. You can't keep anyone happy. You can only keep some people happy. So, you know, it's all good stuff. It's all fantastic. Everyone's criticized. Not everyone, but a lot of people have that that they're always criticizing about something. And at the end of the day, moaning, you know, would you like some cheese with that wine, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's hard for people when they're in the middle of an era to really see what that era is in its entirety, and especially especially in this modern day of, you know, instant gratification. I don't think people are seeing the bigger picture. I think if we go back to the Russell T. Davies era now, we can start to see what kind of an era it was. I was watching some old episodes the other day, they were on TV here, and I thought, gosh, this was a different era. And I haven't always felt that. I've felt that it's still Doctor Who. It's still kind of the same. But now I can see the difference between the Russell T. Davies era and what we're watching at the moment. And in another 5 years' time, I'll look back and I'll be able to see the Moffat era, I think, in a slightly different light as well.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. You watch the... we've just moved, obviously, and I've got millions of DVDs. It's ridiculous. I'm sure you're the same. But when you have to lift the buggers, you realize you've got millions. When you're like, oh my God, you know, why did I buy all these box sets? I'm now risking a hernia, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'd throw on like Rose, or the other night we were unpacking and I had the Tenant, you know, fourth season, which I love. I love all that stuff with, the Nobles and Wilf and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a different show. Not that much of a different show, but it is a different show. It just in terms of how it's filmed and the clarity, because the whole HD thing and all the rest of it. But fantastic stuff. I mean, really, you know, to bring it back to reach an audience as they did with the first Eccleston, well, the only Eccleston kind of season or series, depending on what you want to call it. It's just brilliant. Yeah, just absolutely brilliant. All about the writing.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry, and the acting. And all craft services as well.
Absolutely. Now, to round out these Doctor Who questions, a tiny question to ask here. What is the appeal of Doctor Who to you?
Oh, wow. Wow, another great question.
Just a small question.
Sure. Just a small, not one with a story arc. The appeal of Doctor Who to me, I think a lot of Doctor Who that appeals to me, which is your question, so I'm stating the obvious and being very redundant, I think it's the effect that it's had on me at certain stages in my life, I think. I mean, I gave a rather lengthy answer, as all my answers seem to be earlier on, about, you know, breaking into my aunt and uncle's place and the new season and, you know, when I was moving house with my parents and stuff like that. I'm fascinated. I like anything that unites people as opposed to divides people. I've never really been into politics or anything like that, because I think these things openly divide people. When you have an idea or a notion or a theme or an ideology that says, right, I'm A and you're B, if there's any chance of that whatsoever, I'm not interested. I'm not saying that people can't have disagreements, but to have all this division is the problem with the world at the moment. So I think Who and fandom in general unites people, I think, which I think really, really, really attracts me. I love the way that fans are able to go absolutely bananas and come up with their own versions of Doctor Who in a way that the truly legendary stuff is able to do, if you know what I mean. you know, Star Wars and the other guys, you know, Captain Spock, and I mentioned them earlier on, but I don't really know what they're called. Doctor Who, Star Trek, Star Wars, all that kind of stuff. So to me, it's a feeling of unity, which has certainly been echoed with Mike and I on this dark journey, which has been incredibly light, actually. It's been a very light journey, because we've had such wonderful exposure to people such as yourself. I'm talking to one of the main guys here who's openly been very welcoming to us and encouraging, and the fantastic art that we've had. I took a look at a new poster that one of our fantastic artists had done out of the generosity of you know, of their own heart and their own skill. So to me, it's about a sense of unity, and I think I don't want to get too broad here, but what I would say is that I feel that ideas like these, especially in these times, we should be embracing as much unity as we can, as opposed to things that divide. So Who, that's one of the things that I love about Who. And plus, it's always been in my life. It's been an ever-present. It's been like the crazy uncle who lives in the basement, who's like, you know, you've got wonderful memories of this personality. And that personality, if we're being on the nail about this, is the Doctor, really.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's that.
I feel very similarly as well about it. Yeah. So
There's a wonderful affection, and it always comes across. I mean, let's face it, my friend. You and I would not be having this conversation really across the Commonwealth if you and I were accountants.
Crazy, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a link. And like I said, at the moment, the world is so divided. If anyone wants to argue with me about this, watch the news and cry, but no one will. Let's look for things that have unity. I love all this, you know, Doctor Who International World Tour, Mexico, Brazil, and what is all this about? It's absolute madness, but it's madness in a good way. And as human beings, we should have madness in a good way, not madness in a way that we've all become a little bit too accustomed to.
Yeah,
like I said. Don't want to get too broad.
Well, Capaldi and Coleman made it down here to Sydney, and it was a very sad day, actually, because I was about three blocks from where they were. I knew the crowd was probably maybe 50, 60 people, you know, a fairly small crowd around them. I knew they were there, and I couldn't leave my office to get down there. But
you couldn't?
No, I literally, on that particular day, there was just so much going on, I couldn't leave the office to get down there. And it was just Capaldi is three blocks that way. You know, if I go down there with my camera phone right now, I can probably get a picture with him. And I couldn't.
Well, I think that's a safe bet. I mean, how fan friendly is he? I mean, every time you look, there's someone's getting a picture taken with him. It's incredible. But we know how much of a fan he is. That, well, I'm sorry. Let's just talk about your emotional crisis here, because that's what we do. but I'm sorry you didn't you were not able to see him. Obviously, it still sits very deeply with you, Rob.
Well, it does. But there was a but to the story, and the but was, but he did an awful lot of interviews here, radio and TV, and it was amazing how many of the people interviewing him clearly had been fans in the past or were fans now.
Oh.
And it was like, I never knew that presenter was a fan. I never knew this. And it wasn't just they were getting given questions from a researcher or something that made them look like a fan. They were genuinely fans.
You can tell. You can. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You can tell when there's a genuine, I would say, affection for the show. It kind of spills out. I don't think you can contain it, really, if you know what I mean.
No.
Did you see the clip? Of he's always jumping out at these, I think at the Doctor Who Experience. I think he's always jumping out on.
I think he lives there now, doesn't he?
I think he lives there. He's got a condo there, yeah, just next to the swimming pool. But he's always jumping out on kids who are there. And once again, you look at these kids, and there's kids there from all over the world, right? Which is fantastic. I love that unity. But he was talking about one of the kids. They were all lined up, and I think it was a 10th anniversary sort of birthday thing for the show. And the kids were all lined up, and they were all eating a cake that was shaped like a TARDIS, right? These kids are all wolfing it down. And the doctor's there. What a fantastic thing. I mean, that'll stay with them for the rest of their lives. And one of the kids, in between mouthfuls of TARDIS cake, said, which of your companions do you think you should go back and visit or something? And Capaldi was talking about Susan. Have you seen this?
I've seen that party, and I've seen him with the cake and everything. I've not seen this story, though, no.
Okay. Well, basically, he's in character, and he's talking about all these things, and the kids are asking him about how do you take on the Cybermen and how do you defeat the Daleks and stuff like that. And he basically started talking about Susan. He started saying, you know, my granddaughter Susan and all this kind of stuff. And you could tell he was getting very emotional about this. And I watched this clip and I'm like, what is going on here? This is like absolutely brilliant acting, of course, which we come to expect from Capaldi. But you don't expect it in a forum like this. You know what I mean? Mm. And I thought to myself that there were actually two things that occurred to me. Either he is such an actor that he was able to do this, or he had this kind of feeling from his own self about Susan, because we all make judgments about characters, right, on the show. And he maybe had that opinion himself. I'm really not too sure. But it's a fascinating thing to watch either way. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
I'll have to look that up. On a lighter note, I have seen him at another time down there, and he got behind the cafeteria, and he was serving people their lunch.
Was it?
Yeah. And I thought, I wonder if they're starting to think down there, oh, Christ, it's Pete again. Lock the door.
It's Pete again. Yeah.
He's here again.
I mean, it's enough with Sylvester McCoy serving the pizzas last Wednesday, but... And to be honest, we don't have a hair net to contain his new hair, so it might be a health and safety thing. We never know.
It could be.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear Colin Baker's a fantastic electrician if anyone wants any work. Yeah.
Well, he fixed the chameleon circuit.
He fixed the chameleon circuit. Yes, he did. I told a delightful lady, Tracy at Blue Box Bomb, or Blue Box Barm, if I'm trying to do a North American thing. I did an interview. She sent me some questions, and I told her about moving in and watching Planet of the Spiders. And I said, I basically moved into my new house with John Pertwee. And Tracy thought that I'd moved into my house with John Pertwee. And she sent me an email. She's absolutely lovely. And she sent me an email, Mike and I, and she says, I just wanted to ask, she said, how did Andrew's family end up living with John Pertwee? And I thought, wow, there's an audio drama in itself. So Living with John will be coming out in December of this year to all our legions of fans.
Sensational.
Sensational. Really. And when he's not living with us, he's down at the Beeb serving pasta. So
that's
good.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, Andrew, I was very excited to hear The Age of Banishment this week. Do you have any personal social media to promote, or where can people find AM Audio Media?
Well, this is the section of the interview I normally give to Mike, who's deserted me this evening, but he's encouraging me to leave the nest. AMAudioMedia.com is obviously our own website. And as I said earlier on, we're looking for a Harry to make it Ham Audio Media. We have a Facebook page, AM Audio Media on Facebook, as well as Twitter, and all that good stuff. And if I've got any of this wrong, you can search anything with Doctor Who, Dark Journey, just in case I've screwed anything up, which I probably have done.
I'll also throw those addresses into the show notes as well, so you can also look there.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And it's been an absolute pleasure. Once again, we have a family of Doctor Who fans and colleagues. And yeah, you've been very incredibly supportive to us. And we can't thank you enough. It's always an honor to be on anyone's show. We can't believe we get invited on at all. But it's fantastic. And yeah, thank you once again, and we hope we've done something by the fans for the fans that people will get something a wee bit from if I go back to my Scottish persona.
Well, thank you so much for your time here tonight, and for making the Dark Journey audios as well. They're very entertaining, and of
thank
course,
you. Thank you. That means a lot.
And of course, for debuting The Age of Banishment here with us on Who Wars.
Thank you, thank you. Well, you know, we like to look after you guys, you know.
Okay, well, I'll see what else we can do later in the year, perhaps.
Sure, it's always a pleasure. It's an honor.
Well, there you have it. That was me chatting with Andrew Chalmers, the Doctor from the Doctor Who Dark Journey audios. And before that, we heard an episode, a new episode from the series called The Age of Banishment. I had a lot of fun listening to that episode and then chatting with Andrew. As you can tell, he's quite the raconteur with his stories about Star Wars and Doctor Who and everything in between. And it really makes things easy for an interviewer in general when you are speaking to such a raconteur, and you can ask them a question and they will tell a story that could go for 5 minutes. That's wonderful. I'm not the kind of interviewer who wants to pepper people with questions or butt into what they're saying all that often. And when you get someone like Andrew to speak to, it's a real, real fun thing to be involved with. So I hope you enjoyed listening to it half as much as I enjoyed doing it. I think the final mix on that was about 1:40 for the interview, so you can tell we had a lot of fun speaking. And even then, there were things cut out of it. In fact, if you stick around after the closing credits of this episode, you may just hear one more story from Andrew on the topic of Star Wars. So stick around for that. Look, all that's really left for me to say is probably to reiterate what I was talking about at the start of the episode, and that's, isn't fandom wonderful? Isn't fandom great when you can meet kindred spirits from the other side of the Earth who, you know, if they're the same vintage in particular, they've had similar experiences, even though they're away in another country, yet they still wanted the same merchandise or watched the same programs or reacted to the same things that you did. It's quite remarkable, and it's great to find a kindred spirit like I found with Andrew in that interview to talk about things. And I'm sure that's not the last you've heard of Andrew on the show. We're, of course, big supporters of what AM Audio Media do. The guys have in the past reported from conventions for us, and indeed with that new series coming towards the end of this year, I think that could be a very, very interesting thing for fans of both Star Wars and Doctor Who, and maybe even genre fans in general. Yeah. Look, if you have any thoughts or questions on what we spoke about here, or in episodes of Who Wars or the Cloud City podcast, you can always be in touch with us and let us know what you think just by emailing hello@whowars.net or send an MP3 and we'll play that on the show. If Facebook's more your thing, as the lady says in the closing credits, you can also get us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/WhoWars. And in fact, that's where our listener Baz Hood often writes to us from. So there's many ways to get in touch, and we'd love you to be in touch, because again, the way fandom unites us and binds us, it's like the Force in Star Wars. It's just really great to hear from people. Anyway, without any further ado, I'm Rob Irwin, as you know, and I'll see you again tomorrow in episode 35 of Who Wars. Yes, we are doing a Who Wars episode proper this weekend, as well as this two-hour episode that we've put together here. We're gluttons for punishment at Who Wars. I don't think anyone can accuse us of not putting in our A game when it comes to content. So there you go. I'll see you tomorrow. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Keep smiling. Good night.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.
I actually have some R2-D2 soap from 1977.
Very nice.
Yeah, I have it. I got it in Edinburgh, and I've had it my entire life. And when people come over and they're looking at my stuff, they're maybe not aware of it, I give them the R2-D2 soap, and they take it out, and it's shaped like R2-D2. And as they've got it in their hands, I'm a little bit of a devil. You may have already worked that out. As they've got it in their hands, I say, watch that. I said, I've only washed with it 5 times. It's in very good condition. And I watch them have a fit, because there's a part of them that goes, he's right. He's pretty crazy. He would say that and do it.
All right. Done.
Holy moly, guacamole.